I guess he was trying to be gentle about it. It mattered to him, I guess, that my landing wouldn't be too hard, that the shock wouldn't be too great. He wanted, I think, for me to get it without his having to say it. I fling his hand away. I'm furious that I ever let him touch me. Furious at myself for staying with him when I knew there were things he wasn't telling me. Furious at my father for letting Sammy get on that bus. Furious at Vosh. Furious at the green eye hovering on the horizon. Furious at myself for breaking the first rule for the first cute guy that came along, and for what? For what? Because his hands were large but gentle and his breath smelled like chocolate? I pound his chest over and over until I forget why I'm hitting him, until I'm emptied of fury and all that's left inside is the black hole where Cassie used to be. He grabs at my flailing fists. Cassie, stop it! Settle down, I'm not your enemy. Then whose enemy are you, huh? Because you're somebody's. You weren't out hunting every night, not animals anyway. And you didn't learn killer ninja moves working on your daddy's farm. You keep saying what you're not, and all I want to know is what you are. What are you, Evan Walker? He lets go of my wrists and surprises me by pressing his hand against my face, running his smooth thumb over my cheek, across the bridge of my nose, as if he's touching me for the last time.
I am a shark, Cassie, he says slowly, drawing the words out as if he might be speaking to me for the last time, looking into my eyes with tears in his, as if he's seeing me for the last time. A shark who dreamed he was a man.
I'm falling faster than the speed of light into the black hole that opened with the arrival and then devoured everything in its path. The hole my father stared into when my mother died. The one I thought was out there, separate from me, but really never was. It was inside me. And it had been inside me since the beginning. Growing. Eating up every ounce of hope and trust and love I had. Chewing its way through the galaxy of my soul while I clung to a choice. A choice who is looking at me now as if for the last time. So I do the thing most reasonable people would in my situation. I run. Crashing through the woods in the bitter winter air, bare branch, blue sky, withered leaf, then bursting from the tree line into an open field, the frozen ground crunchy beneath my boots, under the dome of the indifferent sky, the brilliant blue curtain drawn over a billion stars that are still there, still looking down at her. The running girl with her short hair bouncing and tears streaming down her cheeks, not running from anything, not running to anything, just running, running like hell. Because that's the most logical thing to do when you realize the one person on Earth you've decided to trust isn't from the Earth. Never mind that he saved your ass more times than you can remember, or that he could have killed you 100 times over, or that there's something about him, something tormented and sad and terribly, terribly lonely. Like he was the last person on Earth. Not the girl shivering in a sleeping bag, hugging a teddy bear in a world gone quiet. Shut up. Shut up. Just shut up. Chapter 70. He's gone when I come back. And yes, I came back. Where was I supposed to go, without my gun and especially without that damned bear, my reason for living? I wasn't scared to go back. He'd had 10 billion opportunities to kill me. What did one more matter? There's his rifle, his backpack, the first aid kit. And there's his shredded jeans by Howard the Log. Since he didn't pack another pair of pants, my guess is that he's cavorting about the freezing woods in just his hiking boots, like a calendar pinup. No, wait. His shirt and jacket are missing. Come on, bear, I growl, snatching up my backpack. It's time to get you back to your owner. I grab my rifle, check the magazine, ditto for the Luger, pull on a pair of black knit gloves because my fingers have gone numb, steal the map and flashlight from his backpack, and head for the ravine. I'll risk the daylight to put distance between me and Sharkman. I don't know where he went. Maybe to call in the drone strikes now that his cover's blown. But it doesn't matter. That's what I decided on the way back, after running until I couldn't run anymore. It really doesn't matter who or what Evan Walker is. He kept me from dying. Fed me. Bathed me. Protected me. He helped me to get strong. He even taught me how to kill. With an enemy like that, who needs friends? Into the ravine. 10 degrees colder in the shadows. Up and over onto the blasted landscape of Camp Ashpit, running on ground as hard as asphalt. And there's the first body, and I think, if Evan is one of them, whose team do you play for? Would Evan kill one of his own kind to keep up the facade with me? Or was he forced to kill them because they thought he was human? Thinking that makes me sick with despair. There's no bottom to this crap. The more you dig, the further down it goes. I pass another body with barely a glance, and then that bare glance registers and I turn back. The kid soldier has no pants on. It doesn't matter. I keep moving. On the dirt road now, heading north. Still trotting. Move, Cassie, move, move. Forgot the food, forgot the water. Doesn't matter, doesn't matter. The sky is cloudless, huge, a gigantic blue eye staring down. I run along the edge of the road near the woods abutting the west side. If I see a drone, I'll dive for cover. If I see Evan, I'll shoot first and ask questions later. Well, not just Evan. Anyone. Nothing matters but the first rule. Nothing matters except getting Sammy. I forgot that for a while. Silencers. Human, semi-human, clone human, or alien projecting human holograph. Doesn't matter. The ultimate goal of the others. Eradication, internment, or enslavement. Doesn't matter. My chances of success, 1.1 or 0.0001%, doesn't matter. Follow the road, follow the road, follow the dusty dirt road. After a couple miles, it veers to the west, connecting with Highway 35. Another few miles on Highway 35 to the junction of 675. I can take cover at the overpass there and wait for the buses. If the buses still run on Highway 35. If they are still running at all. At the end of the dirt road, I pause long enough to scan the terrain behind me. Nothing. He's not coming. He's letting me go. I head a few feet into the trees to catch my breath. The minute I sink to the ground, everything I've been running from catches up to me long before my breath. I am a shark who dreamed he was a man. Someone is screaming. I can hear her screams echoing through the trees. The sound goes on and on. Let it bring a horde of silencers down upon me, I don't care. I press my hands against my head and rock back and forth, and I have this weird sensation of floating above my body, and then I'm rocketing into the sky at 1,000 miles an hour and watching myself dwindle into a tiny spot before the immensity of the earth swallows me. It's as if I've been loosed from the earth, as if there were nothing to hold me down anymore and I'm being sucked into the void, as if I were bound by a silver cord, and now that cord has snapped. I thought I knew what loneliness was before he found me, but I had no clue. You don't know what real loneliness is until you've known the opposite. Cassie. 2 seconds, on my feet. Another 2.5, swinging the M16 toward the voice. A shadow darts between the trees on my left, and I open up, spraying bullets willy-nilly at tree trunks and branches and empty air. Cassie! In front of me, about 2 o'clock. I empty the clip. I know I didn't hit him. No, I don't have a prayer of hitting him. He's a silencer. But if I keep shooting, maybe he'll back off. Cassie! Directly behind me. I take a deep breath, reload, and then deliberately turn and pump some more lead into the innocent trees. Don't you get it, dummy? He's getting you to use up your ammo. So I wait, feet wide, shoulders square, gun up, scanning right and left. And I can hear his voice in my head giving instruction back at the farm. You have to feel the target, like it's connected to you, like you're connected to it. It happens in the space of time between 1 second and the next. His arm drops around my chest. He rips the rifle from my hands, then relieves me of the Luger. After another half second, he's locked me in a bear hug, crushing me into his chest and lifting my feet a couple inches off the ground as I kick furiously with my heels, twisting my head back and forth, snapping at his forearm with my teeth. And the whole time his lips tickling the delicate skin of my ear. Cassie, don't. Cassie. Let me go. That's been the whole problem. I can't. Chapter 71. Evan lets me kick and squirm until I'm exhausted. Then he plops me down against a tree and steps back. You know what happens if you run, he warns me. His face is flushed. He's having a hard time catching his breath. When he turns to retrieve my weapons, his movements are stiff, deliberate. Catching me, after taking the grenade from me, has cost him. His jacket hangs open, exposing his denim shirt, and the pants he took from the dead kid are two sizes too small, tight in all the wrong places. It looks like he's wearing a pair of capris. You'll shoot me in the back of the head, I say. He tucks my Luger into his belt and swings the M16 over one shoulder. I could have done that a long time ago. I guess he's talking about the first time we met. You're a silencer, I say. It takes everything in me not to jump up and tear off through the trees again. Of course, running from him is pointless. Fighting him is pointless. So I have to outsmart him. It's like I'm back under that car on the first day we met. No hiding from it. No running from it. He sits down a few feet away, resting his rifle across his thighs. He's shivering. If your job is to kill us, why didn't you kill me? I ask. He answers without hesitating, as if he's decided long before I ask the question what his answer would be. Because I'm in love with you. My head falls back against the rough bark of the tree. The bare branches overhead are hard-edged against the bright blue sky. Well, this is a tragic love story, isn't it? Alien invader falls for human girl, the hunter for his prey. I am human. I am human, but finish it, Evan. Because I'm finished now, Evan. You were the last one, my only friend in the world, and now you're gone. I mean, you're here, whatever you are, but Evan, my Evan, he's gone. Not but, Cassie, and. I am human and I'm not. I'm neither and I'm both. I am other and I am you. I look into his eyes, deep set and very dark in the shadowy air, and say, You make me want to puke. How could I tell you the truth? When the truth meant you would leave me, and leaving me meant you would die. Don't preach to me about dying, Evan, wagging my finger at his face. I watched my mother die. I watched one of you kill my father. I've seen more death in 6 months than anyone else in human history. He pushes my hand down and says through gritted teeth, And if there had been something you could have done to protect your father, to save your mother, wouldn't you have done it? If you knew a lie would save Sammy, wouldn't you lie? You bet I would. I would even pretend to trust the enemy to save Sammy. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around, because I'm in love with you. Trying to come up with some other reason he betrayed his species. Doesn't matter, doesn't matter. Only one thing matters. A door slammed closed behind Sammy the day he got on that bus. A door with 1,000 locks. And I realize sitting in front of me is the guy with the keys. You know what's at Wright-Patterson, don't you? I say. You know exactly what happened to Sam. He doesn't answer. Doesn't nod yes. Doesn't shake his head no. What's he thinking? That it's one thing to spare a single measly random human, but something seriously different to give away the master plan? Is this Evan Walker's Under the Buick moment, when you can't run, can't hide, and your only option is to turn and face? Is he alive? I ask. I lean forward. The rough tree bark is cutting into my spine. He hesitates for half a breath, then... He probably is. Why did you bring him there?
To prepare him.
To prepare him for what? Waits a full breath this time, then...
The fifth wave.
I close my eyes. For the first time, looking at that beautiful face is too much to endure. God, I'm tired. So frigging tired I could sleep for 1,000 years. If I slept for 1,000 years, maybe I'd wake up, and the others would be gone, and there'd be happy children frolicking in these woods. I am other, and I am you. What the hell does that mean? I'm too tired to chase the thought. I open my eyes and force myself to look at him. You can get us in. He's shaking his head. Why not? I ask. You're one of them. You can say you captured me.
Wright-Patterson isn't a prison camp, Cassie.
Then what is it?
For you?
Leaning toward me, his breath warms my face.
A death trap. You won't last 5 seconds.
Why do you think I've been trying everything I can think of to keep you from going there? Everything? Really? How about telling me the truth? How about something like, hey, Cass, about this rescue thingy of yours? I'm an alien like the guys who took Sam, so I know what you're doing is absolutely hopeless.
Would it have made a difference if I had?
That isn't the point.
No, the point is, your brother is being held at the most important base the others, have established since the purge began.
Since the what? What did you call it? The purge?
Or the cleansing?
He can't meet my eyes.
Sometimes it's called that.
Oh, that's what you're doing? Cleaning up the human mess?
That's not my word for it. And purging or cleansing or whatever you want to call it wasn't my decision, he protests. If it makes you feel any better, I never thought we should...
I don't want to feel better! The hatred I'm feeling at this moment is all I need, Evan. All I need. Okay, that was honest, but don't go too far. He's the guy with the keys. Keep him talking. Never thought you should do what?
He takes a long drink from the water flask, offers it to me. I shake my head. Wright-Patterson isn't just any base. It's the base, he says, weighing each word carefully. And Vosh isn't just any commander. He's the commander. The leader of all field operations and the architect of the cleans. The one who designed the attacks.
Vosh murdered 7 billion people. The number sounds weirdly hollow in my ears. After the arrival, one of Dad's favorite themes was how advanced the others must be, how high they must have climbed on the evolutionary ladder to reach the stage of intergalactic travel. And this is their solution to the human problem?
There were some of us who didn't think annihilation was the answer, Evan says.
I was one of them, Cassie. My side lost the argument. No, Evan, that would be my side that lost. It's more than I can take. I stand up, expecting him to stand too, but he stays where he is, looking up at me.
He doesn't see you as some of us do, as I do, he says. To him, you're a disease that will kill its host, unless it's wiped out.
I'm a disease. That's what I am to you.
I can't look at him anymore. If I look at Evan Walker for one more second, I'm going to be sick. Behind me, his voice is soft, level, almost sad. Cassie, you're up against something that is way beyond your capacity to fight. Wright-Patterson isn't just another cleansing camp. The complex underneath it
is the central coordinating hub for every drone in this hemisphere. It's Vosh's eyes, Cassie. It's how he sees you. Breaking in to rescue Sammy isn't just risky. It's suicidal. For both of us. Both of us? I glance at him out of the corner of my eye. He hasn't moved.
I can't pretend to take you prisoner. My assignment isn't to capture people, it's to kill them. If I try to walk in with you as my prisoner, they'll kill you, and then they'll kill me for not killing you. And I can't sneak you in. The base is patrolled by drones, protected by a 20-foot-high electric fence, watchtowers, infrared cameras, motion detectors, and 100 people just like me. And you know what I can do.
Then I sneak in without you. He nods.
It's the only possible way. But just because something is possible doesn't mean it isn't suicidal. Everyone they bring in, I mean the people they don't kill right away, is put through a screening program that maps their entire psyche, including their memories. They'll know who you are and why you're there. And then they'll kill you.
There's got to be a scenario that doesn't end with them killing me, I insist.
There is, he says. The scenario where we find a safe spot to hide and wait for Sammy to come to us.
My mouth drops open and I think, huh?
Then I say it.
Huh?
It might take a couple of years. How old is he, 5? The youngest allowed is 7.
The youngest allowed to do what?
He looks away. You saw.
The little kid whose throat he cut at Camp Ashpit, wearing fatigues, toting a rifle almost as big as he was. Now I do want a drink. I walk over to him, and he gets very still while I bend over and pick up the flask. After 4 big swallows, my mouth is still dry.
Sam is the 5th wave, I say. The words taste bad. I take another long drink.
Evan nods.
If he passed his screening, he's alive and being... He searches for the word. Processed.
Brainwashed, you mean?
More like indoctrinated. In the idea that the aliens have been using human bodies and we, I mean humans, have figured out a way to detect them. And if you can detect them, you can...
That isn't fiction, I interrupt. You are using human bodies.
He shakes his head. Not the way Sammy thinks we are.
What does that mean? Either you are or you aren't.
Sammy thinks we look like some kind of infestation attached to human brains, but...
Funny, that's exactly the way I picture you, Evan. An infestation.
I can't help myself. His hand comes up. When I don't slap it away or take off running into the woods, he slowly wraps his fingers around my wrist and gently pulls me to the ground beside him. I'm sweating slightly, though it's bitingly cold. What now?
There was a boy, a real human boy named Evan Walker, he says, looking deeply into my eyes. Just like any kid, with a mom and a dad and brothers and sisters, completely human. Before he was born, I was inserted into him while his mother slept. While we both slept. For 13 years, I slept inside Evan Walker, while he learned to sit up, to eat solid food, to walk and talk and run and ride a bike. I was there, waiting to wake up. Like thousands of others in thousands of other Evan Walkers around the world. Some of us were already awake, setting up our lives to be where we needed to be when the time came.
I'm nodding, but why am I nodding? He came to a human body? What the hell does that mean?
The 4th wave, he says, trying to be helpful. Silencers. It's a good name for us. We were silent, hiding inside human bodies, hiding inside human lives. We didn't have to pretend to be you. We were you, human and other. Evan didn't die when I awakened. He was... absorbed. Ever the noticer, Evan notices I'm totally creeped out by this.
He reaches out to touch me and flinches when I pull away.
So what are you, Evan? I whisper. Where are you? You said you were... What did you say?
My mind's racing a gazillion miles an hour.
Inserted? Inserted where?
Maybe inserted isn't the best word. I guess the concept that comes closest is downloaded. I was downloaded into Evan when his brain was still developing.
I shake my head. For a being centuries more advanced than I am, he sure has a hard time answering a simple question. But what are you? What do you look like?
He frowns. You know what I look like.
No! Oh, God, sometimes you can be so...
Careful, Cassie, don't go there. Remember what matters.
Before you became Evan, before you came here, when you were on your way to Earth from wherever it is you came from, what did you look like?
Nothing. We haven't had bodies in tens of thousands of years. We had to give them up when we left our home.
You're lying again. What, you look like a toad or a warthog or a slug or something? Every living thing looks like something.
We are pure consciousness, pure being, abandoning our bodies and downloading our psyches into the mothership's mainframe was the only way we could make the journey.
He takes my hand and curls my fingers into a fist.
This is me, he says softly. He covers my fist with his hands, enfolding it. This is Evan. It's not a perfect analogy, because there's no place where I end and he begins.
He smiles shyly.
I'm not doing very well, am I? Do you want me to show you who I am?
Holy crap!
No.
Yes, what do you mean?
I picture him peeling off his face like a creature from a horror movie. His voice shakes a little. I can show you what I am.
It doesn't involve any kind of insertion, does it?
He laughs softly. I guess it does, in a way. I'll show you, Cassie, if you want to see.
Of course I want to see. And of course I don't want to see. It's clear he wants to show me. Will showing me get me one step closer to Sam's? But this isn't totally about Sammy. Maybe if Evan shows me, I'll understand why he saved me when he should have killed me. Why he held me in the dark night after night to keep me safe and to keep me sane.
He's still smiling at me, probably delighted that I'm not clawing his eyes out or laughing him off, which might hurt worse. My hand is lost in his, gently bound, like the tender heart of a rose within the bud, waiting for the rain.
What do I have to do? I whisper.
He lets go of my hand, reaches toward my face. I flinch. I would never hurt you, Cassie. I breathe, nod, breathe some more. Close your eyes. He touches my eyelids gently, so gently, a butterfly's wings. Relax. Breathe deep. Empty your mind. If you don't, I can't come in. Do you want me to come in, Cassie?
Yes. No. Dear God, how far do I have to go to keep my promise?
I whisper, yes.
It doesn't begin inside my head like I expected. Instead, a delicious warmth spreads through my body, expanding from my heart outward, and my bones and muscles and skin dissolve in the warmth that spreads out from me, until the warmth overcomes the earth and the boundaries of the universe. The warmth is everywhere and everything. My body and everything outside my body belongs to it. Then I feel him. He is in the warmth too, and there's no separation between us. No spot where I end and he begins. And I open up like a flower to the rain. Achingly slow and dizzyingly fast. Dissolving in the warmth. Dissolving in him, and there's nothing to see. That's just the convenient word he used because there is no word to describe him. He just is. And I open to him.
A flower to the rain.
Chapter 72. The first thing I do after I open my eyes is break out in heart-wrenching sobs. I can't help it. I've never felt so abandoned in my life.
Maybe that was too soon, he says, pulling me into his arms and stroking my hair.
And I let him. I'm too weak, too confused, too empty and forlorn to do anything else but let him hold me.
I'm sorry I lied to you, Cassie, he murmurs into my hair.
The cold squeezes back down. Now I have just the memory of the warmth. You must hate being trapped inside there, I whisper, pressing my hand against his chest. I feel his heart push back.
It doesn't feel like I'm trapped, he says. In a way, it feels like I've been freed.
Freed?
To feel something again. To feel this.
He kisses me. A different kind of warmth spreads through my body. Lying in the enemy's arms. What's the matter with me? These beings burned us alive, crushed us, drowned us, infected us with a plague that made us bleed to death from the inside out. I watched them kill everyone I knew and loved, with one special exception, and here I am playing sucky face with one. I let him inside my soul. I shared something with him more precious and intimate than my body.
For Sammy's sake, that's why.
A good answer, but complicated. The truth is simple.
You said you lost the argument over what to do about the human disease, I say.
What was your answer?
Coexistence? Talking to me, but addressing the stars above us. There aren't that many of us, Cassie. Only a few hundred thousand. We could have inserted ourselves in you, lived out our new lives without anyone ever knowing we were here. Not many of my people agreed with me. They saw pretending to be human as beneath them. They were afraid the longer we pretended to be human, the more human we would become.
And who would want that?
I didn't think I would, he admits. Until I became one.
When you woke up in Evan?
He shakes his head and says simply, as if it's the most obvious thing in the world. When I woke up in you, Cassie, I wasn't fully human until I saw myself in your eyes.
And then there are real human tears in his real human eyes. And it's my turn to hold him while his heart breaks. My turn to see myself in his eyes.
Somebody might say that I'm not the only one lying in the enemy's arms. I am humanity, but who is Evan Walker? Human and other. Both and neither.
By loving me, he belongs to no one.
He doesn't see it that way. I'll do whatever you say, Cassie, he says helplessly.
His eyes shine brighter than the stars overhead.
I understand why you have to go. If it were you inside that camp, I would go. 100,000 silencers couldn't stop me.
He presses his lips against my ear and whispers low and fierce, as if he's sharing the most important secret in the world, which maybe he is.
It's hopeless, and it's stupid. It's suicidal. But love is a weapon they have no answer for. They know how you think, but they can't know what you feel.
Not we. They. A threshold has been crossed, and he isn't stupid. He knows it's the kind you can't cross back over. Chapter 73. We spend our last day together sleeping under the highway overpass like two homeless people, which literally we both are. One person sleeps, the other keeps watch. When it's his turn to rest, he gives my guns back without hesitating and falls asleep instantly, as if it doesn't occur to him I could easily run away or shoot him in the head. I don't know, maybe it does occur to him. Our problem has always been that we don't think like they do. It's why I trusted him in the beginning and why he knew I would trust him. Silencers kill people. Evan didn't kill me. Ergo, Evan couldn't be a silencer. See? That's logic. Ahem, human logic. At dusk, we finish the rest of our provisions and hike up the embankment to take cover in the trees bordering Highway 35. The buses run only at night, he tells me. And you'll know when they're coming. You can hear the sound of their engines for miles because that's the only sound for miles. First you see the headlights, and then you hear them. And then they're whizzing past like big yellow race cars because the highway's been cleared of wrecks and there aren't speed limits anymore. He doesn't know. Maybe they'll stop, maybe they won't. Maybe they'll just slow down long enough for one of the soldiers on board to put a bullet between my eyes. Maybe they won't come at all. You said they were still gathering people, I point out. Why wouldn't they come? He's watching the road beneath us.
At some point, the rescued will figure out they've been duped. Or the survivors on the outside will. When that happens, they'll shut down the base, or the part of the base that's dedicated to cleansing.
He clears his throat, staring down at the road. What does that mean, shut down the base?
Shut it down the way they shut down Camp Ashpit?
I think about what he's saying. Like him, looking at the empty road. Okay, I say finally. Then we hope Vosh hasn't pulled the plug yet. I scoop up a handful of dirt and twigs and dead leaves and rub it over my face. Another handful for my hair. He watches me without saying anything. This is the point where you bop me over the head, I say. I smell like the earth, and for some reason I think about my father kneeling in the rose bed and the white sheet. Or offer to go in my place. Or bop me in the head and then go in my place. He jumps to his feet. For a second I'm afraid he is going to bop me over the head, he's that upset. Instead, he wraps his arms around himself like he's cold. Or he does it to keep himself from bopping me over the head.
It's suicide, he snaps. We're both thinking it. One of us might as well say it. Suicide if I go, suicide if you go. Dead or alive, he's lost.
I pull the Luger from my waistband, put it on the ground at his feet, then the M16. Save these for me, I tell him. I'm going to need them when I get back. And by the way, somebody should say this. You look ridiculous in those pants. I scooch over to the backpack without getting up. Pull out Bear. No need to dirty him up, he's already rough-looking.
Are you listening to me? He demands. The problem is you don't listen to yourself, I shoot back. There's only one way in, and that's the way Sammy took. You can't go. I have to. So don't even open your mouth. If you say anything, I'll slap you.
I stand up, and a weird thing happens. As I rise, Evan seems to shrink.
I'm going to get my little brother, and there's only one way I can do it.
He's looking up at me, nodding. He has been inside me. There has been no place where he ended and I began. He knows what I'm going to say. Alone. Chapter 74. There are the stars, the pinpricks of light stabbing down. There is the empty road beneath the light stabbing down, and the girl on the road with the smudged face and twigs and dead leaves entangled in her short, curly hair, clutching a battered old teddy bear, on the empty road, beneath the stars stabbing down. There is the growl of engines, and then the twin bars of the headlights cutting across the horizon, and the lights grow larger, brighter, like two stars going supernova, bearing down on the girl, who has secrets in her heart and promises to keep, and she faces the lights that bear down on her. She does not run or hide. The driver sees me with plenty of time to stop. The brakes squeal, the door hisses open, and a soldier steps onto the asphalt. He has a gun, but he doesn't point it at me. He looks at me, pinned in the headlights, and I look back at him. He's wearing a white armband with a red cross on it. His name tag says Parker. I remember that name.
My heart skips a beat. What if he recognizes me? I'm supposed to be dead.
What's my name? Lisbeth? Am I hurt?
No. Am I alone?
Yes.
Parker does a slow 360 surveying the landscape. He doesn't see the hunter in the woods who is watching this play out, his scope trained on Parker's head. Of course Parker doesn't see him. The hunter in the woods is a silencer. Parker takes my arm and helps me onto the bus. It smells like blood and sweat. Half the seats are empty. There are kids. Adults, too. They don't matter, though. Only Parker and the driver and the soldier with the name tag Hudson matter. I flop into the last seat by the emergency door, the same seat Sam sat in when he pressed his little hand to the glass and watched me shrink until the dust swallowed me. Parker hands me a bag of smushed gummies and a bottle of water. I don't want either, but I consume both. The gummies have been in his pocket and are warm and gooey, and I'm afraid I'm going to be sick. The bus picks up speed. Someone near the front is crying. Besides that, there's the hum of the wheels and the high rev of the engine and the cold wind rushing through the cracked windows. Parker comes back with a silver disc that he presses against my forehead. To take my temperature, he tells me. The disc glows red. I'm good, he says. What's my bear's name? Sammy, I tell him. Lights on the horizon. That's Camp Haven, Parker tells me. It's perfectly safe. No more running, no more hiding. I nod. Perfectly safe. The light grows, seeps slowly through the windshield, then rushes in as we get closer, flooding the bus now. And we're pulling up to the gate and a loud bell goes off and the gate rolls open. The silhouette of a soldier high in the watchtower. We stop in front of a hangar. A fat man bounds onto the bus, light on the balls of his feet like a lot of fat guys. His name is Major Bob. We shouldn't be afraid, he tells us. We are perfectly safe. There are only two rules to remember. Rule one is remember our colors. Rule two is listen and follow. I fall into line with my group and follow Parker to the side door of the hangar. He pats Lisbeth on the shoulder and wishes her good luck. I find a red circle and sit down. There are soldiers everywhere. But most of these soldiers are kids, some not much older than Sam. They all look very serious, especially the younger ones. The really young ones are the most serious of all. You can manipulate a kid into believing almost anything, into doing almost anything, Evan explained in our mission briefing. With the right training, there are few things more savage than a 10-year-old. I have a number, T-62. T for Terminator. Ha. The numbers are called out over a loudspeaker.
62? T-62? Proceed to the red door, please, number T-62.
The first station is the shower room. On the other side of the red door is a thin woman wearing green scrubs. Everything comes off and into the hamper. Underwear, too. They love children here, but not lice and ticks. There's the shower. Here's the soap. Put on the white robe when you're finished and wait to be called. I sit the bear against the wall and step naked onto the cold tiles. The water is tepid. The soap has a pungent, medicine-y smell. I'm still damp when I slip on the paper robe. It clings to my skin. You can almost see through it. I pick up bear and wait.
Pre-screening is next. A lot of questions. Some are nearly identical. That's to test your story. Stay calm. Stay focused.
Through the next door. Up onto the exam table. A new nurse. Heavier, meaner. She barely looks at me. I must be like the 1,000th person she's seen since the silencers took the base. What's my full name? Elizabeth Samantha Morgan. How old am I? 12. Where am I from? Do I have any brothers or sisters? Is anyone in my family still alive? What happened to them? Where did I go after I left home? What happened to my leg? How was I shot? Who shot me?
Do I know where any other survivors are? What are my siblings' names? My parents? What did my father do for a living? What was the name of my best friend? Tell her again what happened to my family. When it's over, she pats me on the knee and tells me not to be scared. I'm perfectly safe. I hug Bear to my chest and nod. Perfectly safe.
The physical's next. Then the implant. The incision is very small. She'll probably seal it with glue.
The woman named Dr. Pam is so nice. I like her in spite of myself. The dream doctor, kind, gentle, patient. She doesn't rush right in and start poking me. She talks first. Lets me know everything she's going to do. Shows me the implant. Like a pet ship, only better. Now if something happens, they'll know where to find me.
What's your teddy bear's name?
Sammy. Okay if I sit Sammy in this chair while we put in the tracker? I roll onto my stomach. I'm irrationally concerned she can see my butt through the paper robe. I tense, anticipating the bite of the needle.
The device can't download you until it's linked to Wonderland. But once it's in you, it's fully operational. They can use it to track you, and they can use it to kill you.
Dr. Pam asks what happened to my leg. Some bad people shot it. That won't happen here, she assures me. There are no bad people at Camp Haven. I'm perfectly safe. I'm tagged. I feel like she's hung a 20-pound rock around my neck. Time for the last test, she tells me. A program seized from the enemy.
They call it Wonderland.
I grab Bear from his seat and follow her into the next room. White walls, white floor, white ceiling. White dentist chair, straps hanging from the arms and the leg rests, a keyboard and monitor. She tells me to have a seat and steps over to the computer.
What does Wonderland do? I ask.
Well, that's kind of complicated, Lisbeth. But essentially, Wonderland records a virtual map of your cognitive functions.
A brain map?
Something like that, yes. Have a seat in the chair, honey. It won't take long, and I promise it doesn't hurt. I sit down, hugging Bear to my chest.
Oh, no, honey, Sammy can't be in the chair with you.
Why not?
Here, give him to me. I'll put him right over here by my computer.
I give her a suspicious look, but she's smiling and she has been so kind. I should trust her. After all, she completely trusts me.
But I'm so nervous, Bear slips out of my hand when I hold him out for her. He falls beside the chair onto his fat, fluffy head. I twist around to scoop him up, but Dr. Pam says to sit still, she'll get him, and then she bends over. I grab her head with both hands and bring it straight down into the arm of the chair. The impact makes my forearm sing with pain. She falls, stunned by the blow, but doesn't collapse completely. By the time her knees hit the white floor, I'm out of the chair and swinging around behind her. The plan was a karate punch to her throat, but her back is to me, so I improvise. I grab the strap hanging from the chair arm and wrap it twice around her neck. Her hands come up, too late. I yank the strap tight, putting my foot against the chair for leverage and pull. Those seconds waiting for her to pass out are the longest of my life. She goes limp. I immediately let go of the strap, and she falls face first onto the floor. I check her pulse.
I know it'll be tempting, but you can't kill her. She and everyone else running the base is linked to a monitoring system located in the command center. If she goes down, all hell breaks loose.
I roll Dr. Pam onto her back. Blood runs from both nostrils, probably broken. I reach up behind my head. This is the squishy part. But I'm jacked up on adrenaline and euphoria. So far, everything has gone perfectly. I can do this. I rip off the bandage and pull hard on either side of the incision, and it feels like a hot match pressing down as the wound comes open. A pair of tweezers and a mirror would come in handy right about now, but I don't have either one of those, so I use my fingernail to dig out the tracker. The technique works better than I expected. After three tries, the device jams beneath my nail and I bring it cleanly out.
It only takes 90 seconds to run the download, That gives you 3, maybe 4 minutes, no more than 5.
How many minutes in? 2? 3?
I kneel beside Dr. Pam and shove the tracker as far as I can up her nose. Ugh. No, you can't shove it down her throat. It has to be near her brain. Sorry about that.
You're sorry, Evan?
Blood on my finger. My blood, her blood mixed together. I step over to the keyboard. Now the truly scary part.
You don't have Sammy's number, but it should be cross-referenced to his name. If one variation doesn't work, try a different one. There should be a search function.
Blood is trickling down the back of my neck, trailing down between my shoulder blades. I'm shivering uncontrollably, which makes it hard to type. In the blinking blue box, I tap out the word search. It takes 2 tries to spell it correctly. Enter number.
I don't have a number, damn it. I have a name. How do I get back to the blue box? I hit the enter button.
Enter number.
Oh, I get it now. It wants a number.
I key in Sullivan.
Data entry error.
I'm wavering between throwing the monitor across the room and kicking Dr. Pam until she's dead. Neither will help me find Sam, but both would make me feel better. I hit the escape button and get the blue box and type search by name. The words vanish, vaporized by Wonderland. The blue box blinks blank again. I fight back a scream. I'm out of time.
If you can't find him in the system, we'll have to go to Plan B.
I'm not crazy about Plan B. I like Plan A, where his location pops up on a map and I run right to him. Plan A is simple and clean. Plan B is complicated and messy. 1 more try. 5 more seconds can't make that big a difference.
I type Sullivan into the blue box. The display goes haywire. Numbers begin to race across the gray background, filling the screen, like I just gave it a command to calculate the value of pi. I panic and start hitting random buttons, but the scroll doesn't stop. I'm well past 5 minutes. Plan B sucks, but B it is.
I duck into the adjoining room where I find the white jumpsuits. I grab one off the shelf and wisely attempt to dress without taking off the robe first. With a grunt of frustration, I shrug out of it, and for a second I'm totally naked. The second in which that door beside me will fly open and a battalion of silencers will flood into the room. That's the way things happen in all Plan Bs. The suit is way too big, but better too big than too small, I think, and I'm quickly zipped up and back in the Wonderland room.
If you can't find him through the main interface, there's a good possibility she has a handheld unit somewhere on her. It works on the same principle, but you have to be very careful. One function is a locator. The other is a detonator. Key in the wrong command and you won't find him. You'll fry him.
When I burst back in, she's sitting up, holding Bear in one hand and a small silver thing that looks like a cell phone in the other. Like I said, Plan B sucks. Chapter 75. Her neck is flaming red where I choked her. Her face is covered in blood. But her hands are steady, and her eyes have lost all their warmth. Her thumb hovers over a green button below a numeric display.
"Don't press it," I say. "I'm not going to hurt you."
I squat down, hands open, palms toward her.
"Seriously, you really do not want to press that button."
She presses the button. Her head snaps back, and she flops down. Her legs kick twice, and she's gone. I leap forward, snatch Bear out of her dead fingers, and race back through the jumpsuit room and into the hallway beyond. Evan never bothered to tell me how long after the alarm sounds before the stormtroopers are mobilized, the base is locked down, and the interloper captured, tortured, and put to a slow and agonizing death. Probably not that long. So much for Plan B. Hated it anyway. The only downside is Evan and I never drew up a Plan C. He'll be in a squad with older kids, so your best bet is the barracks that ring the parade grounds. Barracks that ring the parade grounds. Wherever that is. Maybe I should stop someone and ask for directions, because I only know one way out of this building,
And that's the way I came in, past the dead body and the old fat mean nurse and the young thin nice nurse, and right into the loving arms of Major Bob.
There's an elevator at the end of the hall with a single call button. It's a one-way express ride to the underground complex, where Evan says Sammy and the other recruits are shown the phony creatures attached to real human brains. Festooned with security cameras. Crawling with silencers. Only two other ways out of this hallway. The door just to the right of the elevator, and the door I came out of. Finally, a no-brainer.
I slam through the door and find myself in a stairwell. Like the elevator, the stairs go in one direction. Down.
I hesitate for half a second. The stairwell is quiet and small, but it's a good, cozy kind of small. Maybe I should stay here a while and hug my bear, perhaps suck my thumb.
I force myself to take it slow down the five flights to the bottom. The steps are metal, cold against my bare feet. I'm waiting for the shriek of alarms and the pounding of heavy boots and the rain of bullets from above and below. I think of Evan at Camp Ashpit, taking out four heavily armed, highly trained killers in near total darkness, and wonder why I ever thought it was wise to stroll into the lion's den alone when I could have had a silencer by my side. Well, not totally alone. I do have the bear. I press my ear against the door at the bottom and rest my hand on the lever. I hear my own heartbeat, and that's all. The door flies inward, forcing me back against the wall, and then I do hear the pounding of boots as men toting semi-automatics race up the stairs. The door starts to swing closed, and I grab the lever to keep the door in front of me until they make the first turn and thunder out of sight. I whip around into the corridor before the door closes. Red lights mounted from the ceiling spin, throwing my shadow against the white walls, wiping it away, throwing it again. Right or left? I'm a little turned around, but I think the front of the hangar is to the right. I jog in that direction, then stop. Where am I most likely to find the majority of silencers in an emergency? Probably clustered around the main entrance to the scene of the crime. I turn around and run smack into the chest of a very tall man with piercing blue eyes. I wasn't close enough to see his eyes at Camp Ashpit. But I remember the voice. Deep, hard-edged, razor-sharp.
"Well, hello there, little lamb," Vosh says. "You must be lost."
Chapter 76. His grip on my shoulder is as hard as his voice.
"Why are you down here?" he asks. "Who is your group leader?"
I shake my head. The tears welling up in my eyes aren't fake. I have to think fast, and my first thought is Evan was right. This solo act was doomed, no matter how many backup plans we concocted. If only Evan were here. If Evan were here.
"He killed her," I blurt out. "That man killed Dr. Pam."
"What man? Who killed Dr. Pam?"
I shake my head, bawling my little eyes out, crushing my battered teddy against my chest. Behind Vosh, another squad of soldiers races down the corridor toward us. He shoves me at them.
"Secure this one and meet me upstairs. We have a breach."
I'm dragged to the nearest door, shoved inside a dark room, and the lock clicks. The lights flicker on. The first thing I see is a frightened, young-looking girl in a white jumpsuit holding a teddy bear. I actually give a startled yelp. Beneath the mirror is a long counter on which a monitor and keyboard sit. I'm in the execution chamber Evan described, where they show the new recruits the fake brain spiders. Forget the computer. I'm not about to start hitting buttons again. Options, Cassie. What are your options? I know there's another room on the other side of the mirror, and there has to be at least one door, which may or may not be locked. I know the door to this room is locked, so I can wait for Vosh to come back for me, or I can bust through this looking glass to the other side. I pick up one of the chairs, rear back, and hurl it against the mirror. The impact rips the chair from my hands, and it falls to the floor with a deafening, at least to me, clatter. I've put a large scratch in the thick glass, but that's the only damage I see. I pick up the chair again, take a deep breath,
lower my shoulders, rotate my hips as I bring the chair around. That's what they teach you in karate class. Power is in rotation. I aim for the scratch. Focus every ounce of my energy on that single spot. The chair bounces off the glass, throwing me off balance.